good to go.
Okay.
Excellent. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle C. Baker. And before we get started, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And of course, with season two, this episode is brought to you by the Self-Esteem Doctor Online Academy with the amazing Dr. Simone Alicia. She has a wealth of resources there to help with your child's self-esteem and confidence and so much more. So I'll put the link in the description so that you can have a look. I highly recommend it. And today we have an amazing guest. I am really excited to have her on because it's, I think we've been talking quite a bit, and it's just some wonderful work that's being done to help the communities and to help families. And I'm all for that, of course. So I have the lovely Dr. Stephanie Montgomery from Build a Brain, and I'm going to let her explain a little bit of what she does. So thank you so much, Stephanie, for coming on and chatting with me today.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be here. I've been looking forward to it. And Danielle, as we've talked several times previous to this podcast being recorded, I think each time we could have recorded and had some really good material because we go very quickly from pleasantries to let's talk about the work. So I'm excited to spend some time with you, and we're capturing it today. So thank you for that opportunity.
It's funny that you brought that up because I did think about that throughout our conversation. I was like, I should be recording this. This is amazing. We're going to touch on some of those things today. But before we start, can you kind of briefly share your story? Tell us about you and how about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
I would love to. Thank you for that chance. So I recently moved to Pensacola, Florida, about 6 months ago. And so I grew up in Georgia. I worked in early childhood education. So I worked at the classroom level, a kindergarten, first, second, and third grade teacher. I was a literacy coordinator for a school district. Really enjoyed that work and was able to impact classroom instruction from a district perspective. So, looking at curriculum and professional development and training and support for teachers, as well as continuing to work with parents. For over 25 years, I have worked with children in private tutoring. Most recently, the past 7 to 8 years, focused on dyslexia and language delays. After I left the school district, I went to a state regional position. So I was able to work with 17 school districts supporting the state's initiatives. And so that furthered my scope of work. And I really appreciate the autonomy that I had to be able to learn about how different cultures and communities operate within a formalized institution such as a school setting, and also had many opportunities to work with community agencies and philanthropic charitable work alongside the work that I was doing for the state of Georgia. So I recently retired from the state of Georgia, and that's what precipitated my move down to Florida. And I had a very unique and just really unexpected opportunity to begin my work with Build a Brain. And it's really fascinating when you get on the other side of turning 50 and retiring, to be able to look back and see how different experiences in your life really work together for the good. And so my work in K-12 education across different environments always led me back to the foundational years and what can we do to help set children up to be successful. And so my heart goes out to classroom teachers, specifically K-2 teachers, because that is the real nuts and bolts of teaching children how to read and write, which we know is really a liberty of sorts. It's a civil right that we have to be able to be literate and advocate for ourselves. But the further that I went down the pathway of language disabilities and understanding more about the neuroscience of learning to read and write, it really just led me to the space that I'm in now at Build a Brain. So we are focused on 0 to 3 early brain development, and that really encapsulates what's happening with mom prior to birth, what's happening with mom during those first 3 years as she's caring for that infant to toddler, and then obviously what's happening in that child's brain development. So I'll pause there because I know we'll get into more of the work, but I think that gives you a nice background as to, I mean, where I came from and how I ended up here with Build a Brain.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. I love that. I like how you mentioned kind of the synchronicities where you kind of go back to the foundation of where you started off, because I have a similar story with that, where you're just coming back, and you did touch on the impact or the development of the child very early on. It's like that foundation that they need even from before birth. So can you kind of talk about, is of course you do a lot of work with speech and reading and writing, so the impact of talking and interacting with your child from birth, right, in those first 3 years, can you kind of share a little bit of how important that is to have that interaction right from the beginning?
Right from the beginning. So I firmly believe that we're accountable for that which we know. I also believe in being very transparent and authentic. I feel like I owe the children that I taught for many, many years, and even my own children, an apology. I did not know. I didn't have a full grasp of everything that was happening during those first 3 years and how important language was. Now, I had the opportunity to stay home with my oldest for several years. And so he may disagree. We talked a lot. We talked a whole lot during that time, but I don't know that I fully understood. So now I have this compelling sense of urgency to ensure that families know there's a lot happening during those first 3 years. And our brains were not designed for reading and writing. And usually that causes people to pause a minute and go, wait, what are you talking about here? So our brain, specifically the left side of the brain, was designed for speech and language. That's how our brain has been designed. It has evolved over the past 100,000 years to really have a robust language capacity. And so when we think about, how this evolves, infants begin to hear at about 27 weeks gestation. So they're hearing what's happening around them through the womb. They're hearing and taking in sounds, nuances of sounds. They recognize their mother's voice as soon as they're born. Within 2 to 3 hours, they have mirror neurons that are activated. So they are beginning to imitate immediately. So the brain is taking on from a neurological perspective. The brain is designed and wired to absorb everything in their environment. So if a child does not have the opportunity to have rich language prior to starting school, they really are at a disadvantage for learning what we call in a school setting phonics, when we're attaching the sound, the phoneme, to the grapheme, the letter representation. That is what constitutes a rewiring of the left side of the brain to take the foundation of language and speech and layer on the printed piece of it. So I think, going back to what I said in owing an apology, I think if I understood a little bit more about how the brain is designed to be ready to read and write, I think I would have placed more of an emphasis and increased my understanding on just how important it is just to talk. We don't have to have these, fancy gadgets, and we don't have to have flashcards and these expensive trips and, experiential things outside of our natural environment. We just need to be present in our natural environment and talk, because if we talk with our children and give them opportunities to talk back, starting with mirror neurons, when a baby is sticking out their tongue because you're blowing bubbles, that's really the beginning of speech. That's teaching them how to use their mouth and their lips and their voice and the air that subsequently goes into cooing and babbling. It's all part of the process. I was just unaware of what was happening. I was just trying to, be the best parent I could at that time. I didn't fully understand the magnitude of it. So that's been, to me, the most exciting part of this work. And so going back to being accountable, I have an opportunity now to educate and support parents through healthcare systems, through community agencies, and through networks like this, being able to talk on podcasts and share that information.
And it's so important, because it's, if you don't know, we often attach speech to just the verbal side of things. But in children, there's research on that as well, where they have 100 languages, but there's only one that's verbal. Everything else is through sound, nonverbal, body language. So yes, it's so important. And we think that we should start teaching them vocabulary once they start saying words, but they're saying so much already. When you say sticking out their tongue, the cooing, that's all speech, that's all language. So it's so important to, and if parents knew, because I know I had the same reaction, it's like, oh, if I would have known this, you know, there's so much work to do. But mirroring them when they're cooing, coo back, so you're encouraging them to start talking back is great. Can you recommend any kind of activities that the parents could do? Again, very simple, like you say, it doesn't have to be the latest educational toy or system, but just activities, interactions that they could start right away with their child from birth.
Sure. So I'd like to give a plug here to some research that was done in 1995 by Hart and Riesley. The 30 million word gap is what that study was actually coined. And they looked at, Hart and Riesley looked at the quality and quantity of language used in homes with children under the age of three. There were a lot of takeaways that different researchers have acted upon based on that study. One is looking at language used across different socioeconomic factors and how there is a disconnect between the two. But I charge families with, we just need to talk. There should not be a disconnect between the overheard language in homes and in caregiving spaces. We all can communicate with our child, even if that is sign language. We all can communicate with our child. So you talk about activities. This is irrespective of socioeconomic determinants. Narrating your day, talking about what you're doing. I'm changing your diaper. Your diaper is wet. Ooh, that's a stinky diaper. Oh, that made you laugh. I love the way your voice sounds when you laugh. Describing exactly everything that you're doing. Asking open-ended questions long before they can communicate back, which is what we call expressive language. They are understanding so much more than they're able to yet communicate. It's kind of like an iceberg. If you think about an iceberg, it goes so much deeper than what rises above the surface. And that's how children's language is developing. Between 6 and 12 months, infant's language is reaching its peak of architecture and capacity for future learning. So long before they're conversing with you in short sentences and phrases, they're understanding language, and that expression comes later. So narrating your day, open-ended questions. What do you think about that? You know, again, even if they can't be your conversational partner, you're opening up the opportunity for them to think about that. Choices, you know, labeling things, being very descriptive. I caution parents to not use a lot of pronouns. So don't say put it there. Describe what it is. Describe he or she or them. Describe it with language so that, and they don't yet understand really about pronouns. And I know as being a first grade teacher, I had many children that would confuse pronoun usage. So be descriptive in your language. Sing, talk, play, read, talk out loud. Really, I think that's the best thing that we can do for our children. And be present. Be physically.
Yeah, be present.
Yeah, be present. Even if you only have 7 minutes a day because you're working long hours, seven minutes, be present. Talk with your child.
I love that. And I like how you just how you mentioned the descriptive words versus the pronoun, because it's something that we do so naturally that we don't think about it, but put it there. What is it and what is there for a child who's just learning their environment? They do need to kind of, you know, put the toy back in the basket next to it. And we're adding so much more words in there. I think it's amazing. That's really nice. You've mentioned as well that I that's what I like about talking to you, because the words that you use are very visual, because I'm a visual person, so I see the pictures that come with your words, but that our brain was not designed for reading and writing. It was designed for speech. So could you kind of talk about that segue over to reading, the important role or the function that language, that speech development has for the reading skills later on in the academic years?
I can. So as children, as I mentioned before, between 6 and 12 months are beginning to discriminate phonemes. And phonemes are those individual speech sounds. Okay. And I also want to, as an aside, give a plug to bilingual, multilingual households.
Yes.
I encourage you strongly to speak in your native language, to expose your child to that language prior to 1 years of age. They are really, you know, they're really absorbing all that in. Again, even if they can't converse back, use that native language that you're most comfortable and familiar with your child. Don't hold that language back. Around the age of one, they begin to prune off some of those distinctions of different phoneme sounds. Not to say that you can't start at age one, but if you want to get the most impact for that future language capacity and to be able to speak flexibly between different languages, really, it starts before the age of one. I digress. So as children are beginning to individualize those phoneme sounds, as they are older, they can then begin to take the language and the vocabulary that they've learned and begin to isolate the unique sounds in them. And then as they get a little older, then we begin to layer on what are the printed graphemes, is what we call them, but the letters that match those sounds. It's a natural development and progression. But the introduction of formalized reading and writing, and so we use the word decoding and encoding, so to take apart and put together. So that formal instruction has to be taught explicitly. That's not something that the brain just evolves to understand. Now, we do have about 5 to 7% of children who are able to make sense of the code. And I'm going to use the word code here. They've grown up in a rich language environment. They've had access and opportunity to lots of print. And so we do have a small percentage of children, irrespective of formalized instruction, that can make sense of the code. They can use contextual clues in picture books and words and how they match up together, and they can break that code on their own. But that's not the vast population. So teaching from the perspective of immersion, and I'll try to stay away from technical instruction words or buzzwords that are circulating right now, at least in the United States. But most children need explicit instruction, but they need that foundation of language. So let me give you an example. If you were trying to teach a child how to decode D-O-G and trying to help them to understand the sound that D and that O and that G could make, right? The representation of a sound to a letter. If the child hasn't had experiences in what a dog is, they haven't touched or heard or seen or experienced through a book, that doesn't hold any meaning. So in Broca's area, in the part of the brain where you have meaning, or we can use the four-part processor where you have the letters and the sounds that come together to attach meaning. And what does that meaning mean in speech and print? If you don't have that vocabulary, it's just an unfamiliar string of sounds that we put together.
Right.
So I don't know if that answers your question or went too technical with that, but you have to have both. We can't out-strategize.
Right.
Trying to teach a child language, because print and what we read and what we write is just a communication vehicle for language.
Yes.
We've had language. It's just we needed to curate that language or to be able to share that language with more people than what's just in our environment. That's why we created symbols, to be able to communicate or to curate language and pass that down to other people.
I love that. And it's interesting just by you explaining it, when you're, I call it dissecting the word or the process of coding, you know, kind of putting all that together. It's a huge process. You have to take it apart. It's not, we read dog and it's the easiest word ever, but what it takes for a developing brain to take the letters, make sense of each letter, then put them together, make sense of that, and then attach it to what it's related to. And then I can see why we struggle so much with reading and with writing is a whole other thing.
Exactly.
You have the hand, the eye coordination, then the muscles and the bones. Oh my
Exactly.
goodness.
Well, and I'll give a plug here. For many, many years, we talked about reading and writing being reciprocal in nature. And it's really not reciprocal in nature, in that, and you just mentioned, when we think about the word dog and we begin to break it down and think about the individual sounds and what are those letters or graphemes that are representation of that sound we're trying to put into print, what's in our head, right? There are extra steps. How do you form the letter D? You know, how does your hand work to produce the letter D? And so it is very complex. And so conversely, you know, I said, I wish I'd known what I know now when I was in the classroom and raising my own children. I also feel just overwhelmed by how complex this work is and amazed that as many people can read and write as there are. So it's very understandable why we have this illiteracy problem, I guess, for lack of a better word. And I really do think that we've traded one problem for another, one we maybe didn't have an awareness of the importance. We had maybe families going back into the workforce and we have children not in their natural environment. Others are caregiving for them. And then we move along and evolve as a nation and a country. And then now we have screens and devices that we're trying to augment that natural environment. And there's so much research that is continuing to come out, not just as a result of the pandemic, but I think it illuminates a larger problem. I mentioned the study in 1995 where they looked at the differences across socioeconomic factors. And while I would advocate that doesn't have to be the case, we can all talk with our children and communicate. Now we have a different problem. You know, now we have screen times that are interfering with the emotional control and development that's happening in young children. It really hijacks the limbic system. And so while we may think that giving a child a tablet or a device helps to calm them down, it really is dysregulation. It doesn't equip our children to be able to self-regulate. And so we're seeing lots of research come out about anger and outburst in a social setting when children start preschool and in kindergarten settings. And that can be tied back to an increase in screen time. Recently, I read screen time that said a three-year-old who has an hour of screen time misses 68 conversational interactions with an adult or caregiver. 68. Well, that's cumulative. The AAP is recommending no screen time under the age of two and between 3 and 5 30 minutes a week. And so you can see exponentially if a child is on a screen for an hour a day, and unfortunately the averages are a lot higher than an hour a day, we're not only missing out on opportunities to have that serve and return interactions with a loving caregiver or adult. We're also, and I use the word hijacking, but we're also really diminishing that child's ability to self-regulate, to be able to understand emotions. And then we could, you know, even go down the path of two-dimensional representation with infants, and they're not quite ready to transfer that information from a novelty to a familiar if they're just using a screen. I'll pause there because that's probably another podcast, but it does speak to the language piece that we can't replace language with a device. They need that three-dimensional, experiential, using all senses in the moment, reacting.
I love that you brought that up, because that was actually one of my questions, is that screen time, because a lot of people just associate screen time to just watching, but there's so much more to the development and everything is interconnected. So the fact that there's no interaction, the child is not developing those words, that vocabulary, and the self-regulation. The children have to mimic, they learn through the adults how to self-regulate. So now if they don't have that interaction, they can't, and they can't relate this 2D picture, this flat screen to real life, because they haven't been given a model to imitate, or they don't have the words to express their emotions, because now we're not interacting with them to say, now this is, that means you are angry, or you are happy, or you are frustrated. We're not putting those words into circulation, so they, it's a big soup of a big mess of, to, what, in terms of development. We're just kind of mixing it all up there, and it's again, it's another episode for sure, Kristen. I would
it's
even
very
take it.
fascinating.
It is fascinating. I would take it even further, because I've been doing research on not only the children's screen time, but the adults' screen time. There are many adults out there who cannot put that device away. So again, children mimic what they see. So if you as a parent are not able to put that phone down or that tablet down, or then you're just modeling what behavior they should be following. So there's a huge
Absolutely.
there's a lot of work to be done there. Oh, I could talk. This is the stuff I love to talk about.
No, but I appreciate you mentioning that, and that brings it full circle. Our children are watching and listening, and that's a big responsibility. So whether that's you as the primary parental figure in that child's life, or it's a caregiver, whether that be a family member, whether that is, you know, a child care center, whomever, the person that is spending time with that child while they're awake, that child's modeling the behavior that they see, you know, how they respond to, you know, problems, how they demonstrate joy and happiness, what they do with their time, whether they're engaged in, you know, the moment and their environment, or they're engaged in, you know, a screen, a TV, a computer, a phone. So it's a big responsibility. It
it
really
is.
is.
And a lot of the times we just don't realize that that's,
we don't,
we're doing it. And so that's why it's so important to have these conversations. And I could talk to you all day about this, but
absolutely.
we're going to switch it up a little bit, and just so you can talk to, you can, so we get to know you a little bit better, if you don't mind sharing with us something that people may not know about you. I'm going to put you on the spot.
That's okay. It goes back actually to modeling and watching others. And so I'll pull it into that. Now, I could tell you about my background, but again, we would need another podcast, and maybe that would go more into the therapy trauma. Kidding aside, you know, things haven't always been easy for me, and there have been some bumps in the road. For me, I try to focus on the fact that we were all once a child. I put on my shoes the same way as probably most everyone else in, you know, in the world. We see people the way we choose to see people. And so what people don't know about me was really how they choose to see me. I get up every day and I work really hard and I try to do my best, and things haven't always fallen into place for me, but I still kept trying to do the best with the talents and resources I had and tried to serve others. So what people don't know about me, I invite them to get to know me and choose to see me in the best light, but know that whether it's someone that we admire and look up to and want to emulate, or someone that unfortunately we are judging, we're all created in the same way and started and developed along a similar path. And we just took different paths to get us to where we are now.
I love that answer. I've never heard that answer before. And I think it's great, because people choose to see us the way they want to see us. So if they don't know something about us, they just didn't ask, or they didn't look at that side of it. I love that. Oh, it's amazing. So I discover things from you every day. I love that. Is there any advice you wish you would have had sooner in life, just to make things easier for you, or so, you know, some kind of wisdom you'd like to pass on to others to say, you know, this will make it so much easier than not knowing about it?
I think grace is really the best. Give yourself grace. And it really goes back to what I said a few minutes ago. Moms and dads, grandparents raising grandchildren, foster families, an older brother raising a younger sister, give yourself grace. Absorb as much information as you can. Surround yourself with people who aspire to be the best that they can be. You are a product of your environment. I've read before from someone, I can't recall whom wrote this, but you're a product of the five or six people that you associate yourself with the most. Surround yourself with good people who care about others and give yourself grace every day. Get up and try again. Do your very best with the talents and resources that you have. And we are accountable for the information that we have been exposed to. And so if we know that early brain development and language acquisition is important, then we're accountable to that. And we need to do a good job with communicating. It's not too late. And at Build a Brain, we often talk about, we want to save, everyone. We want to make it easier for everyone. And the one way that we can is by educating. And while we may not be able to change the trajectory of that mom or dad or family's life in this moment, we absolutely can change the trajectory of that child's life in this moment. So putting down any past things, experiences that have happened or have not happened for you, we have the opportunity to change moving forward by being present, by nurturing interactions, by building language, being present, and pouring ourselves into those infants and toddlers that we've been given the opportunity to be invested in.
Yeah, no, that's great. That is great advice. We do what we can with what we have, and
yes,
just to accept, and yeah, grace is so important.
Yes,
so important. Great advice.
That was okay to say on this podcast.
Absolutely,
it's my motto to live by.
Exactly. No, I don't filter anything. It's
okay.
Exactly the way people need to hear the message, and okay. that's wonderful. Yeah, absolutely. What is new for Build a Brain? Is there anything coming up? Is there a new incentive? Yeah. Is there a new project coming up?
Yes. So Build a Brain, we started as a national company to scale. I don't know if your audience knows. The work began 2017 to 2019 in Pensacola, Florida. They worked with the University of Chicago under the leadership of Dr. Dana Suskin, a cochlear implant surgeon. And the work began in Pensacola, looking to see if simply by showing a video as part of the discharge process on the mother-baby floor about the importance of the first 3 years and the critical brain development that's happening in those first 3 years and what parents can do. And we mentioned in the video, put down the screens and talk with your child. But the study 2017 to 19 was to look to see if that one simple thing could make a difference. And so we did see in our surveys from families that we can increase education, we increase that knowledge base from which we can move forward with. Since that time, additional resources, tools, community support has been brought in. So many things have been layered onto that. But about two years ago, coming up on 2 years, Build a Brain as a company was formed to take that work that had started in Pensacola and make it a national company to scale the work. So we are working across multiple states in the United States and so excited about that work. We stay true to the healthcare system being the pillar of that work because we do have the unique opportunity to get in front of most every mom delivering in a hospital setting. And so whether that's moving upstream in prenatal classes and working with obstetrics or right up into discharge, we believe that 100% of families deserve the opportunity to know what's happening in their child's brain development and be provided with books and videos and emails and text messages that follow them for 3 years so that they can grow along with their child chronologically and be told those activities and things that they can be doing as their child is learning and developing. So we continue to grow in that space. We're getting into the NICU space because we want to be able to honor those families who may have a different experience in those first 2 to 3 years. And because of a NICU experience in the hospital. So there may be some developmental delays and their trajectory may look a little different. And we want to provide resources and supports for them. We are making our books audible so that families who need that audible version of our Baby Steps book can have that afforded to them. We're expanding the languages that our newsletters and the printed books are provided in. And we have media tracks now where bite-sized, you know, the opportunities for parents to learn about descriptive language, asking open-ended questions. We have those available for our partners to use. And just respond to the research as new research is made available about infant mortality, postpartum mental health for our maternal population. So whatever research is out there, we try to respond to that by educating and working with our community agencies and healthcare systems to provide those supports to our families, caregivers, and ultimately that impacts our children. So lots going on and excited to be part of this work.
Yes.
Thank you.
That is amazing. And I honestly believe that it should be in every hospital and every clinic and every, it's just, mothers are so overwhelmed and families are so overwhelmed leaving the hospital. So just to already have that kind of roadmap that can help them is just incredible work. And thank you so much for sharing that with us today. And I will have to have you on another time just to
talk about it. I would love that opportunity. So
yeah. Before we go, is there, I always ask this question, I kind of explained it to you earlier, but what do you want to be when you grow up?
I want to be content. And let me unpack that for just a minute. I know we're concluding here. I want to be content. So when I get to that time, whether that's 2 weeks, 2 years, 2 decades from now, I want to know that I've done my very best with the information and resources that I had available to serve others. And so every day that I get up, I want to, and content being an active word, not necessarily a mindset, but being an active word, I want to be content that what I've been given this next day and what I've been provided through experiences and opportunities, how can I serve others? And if I can achieve that, I can be content. I thought when I earned my doctorate degree, I was going to feel differently. You know, when I thought I got married, I was going to feel differently. When I thought I would have my first child, I'd feel differently. And while I did, I absolutely did, it's really part of the journey.
Yeah.
And it's how you interact and give back to others. And so those titles and labels, you know, those are fantastic. I'd like to get another degree, quite honestly, because I love learning. But I also know that it's more about the journey and the person, not aspiring to be something or some profession, because you can be useful in any profession with any title. So just being content. Thank you. And thank you for asking and letting me share that.
That's amazing. Yes, it's such important to be content to say, I'm happy with what I'm leaving behind. I'm happy with what I've done. And like you say, of service, we acquire all this knowledge, but it's important to share it and to make it easier for others. And so thank you very much for sharing it. And I love that question. I never get the same answer. You know, some people get very technical and some people get very philosophical, and I just love it. It just opens up another conversation.
It does. Well, I'd like to encourage your audience listening, if they heard something today that resonated with them, share it with someone else.
Yes.
And that's using your gift to share with someone else, a mother that's struggling, a dad that's a single dad of children, a grandparent that's raising a grandchild. You know, share your knowledge with someone else, and you can be a source of strength for them. So that's what we do. We share what we know with others to help them be successful. So thank you. This was fantastic. I enjoyed being part of this time to share with you. And I hope that your audience can benefit from our conversation.
They certainly will. Before we go, would you mind sharing or how could people, what is the best way to follow you or to reach you or to get more information? I will put the information in the description, but just to
thank you for that. So you can find out more information about our company at www.buildabrainnow.com. And that's buildabrainnow.com. And so there's resources and information on our website. You can find out where we are currently located on our interactive map. And then within our website, you can also reach out and contact me. That comes directly to me, and I would love to connect back to you. So thank you.
That's amazing. Yes, that is a great website. I've visited a few times, and it's just so much information there. That's great. So thank you again, Stephanie, for joining me today. I really enjoyed our chat, and I'm sure I'll have you on again. So many things we can talk about.
Wonderful. I look forward to it. Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you. And for everybody watching or listening, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever the channel you're listening or watching from. Don't forget to check out the Self-Esteem Doctor Online Academy and go have a look at Build a Brain and see how that can help you in your journey as well. And until next time, stay safe, stay awesome, and we'll talk soon.